close, pressed myself against his side, resting my head on his broad, bare chest. "I'm sorry," I said, and I was. I was sorry for a thousand things, not least of which were all the things my silence allowed him to assume. No, all the things my words led him to assume. This was what Rue did, wasn't it? Davis was having one conversation, honest and truthful, and I was having at least three. I didn't want to be that kind of person, but it was in me. It was a part of me, and it was oh so very useful at this moment. He put his arm around me, still talking, pulling me in closer. By the end, she was drinking all day, every day, driving Maddie to kindergarten, blasted. Toting Maddie's little friends around in the car, too. Every minute of her life, she was lying. She never said a word, but it was lying, all the same. God, yes, I wish I'd known. I'd have gotten out much sooner. He shook his head. It sounds like I'm off topic here, but it applies. You need to be sure what happened before you act. If Tate's telling the truth, then stay out of it. But if it's an ongoing lie, an affair, you have to tell Charlotte, so she can get out and not waste any more time. I had my answers then, for every question. Even the one I'd actually asked, the one about my friend. Char was in real trouble, separate and distinct from mine. I'd let my worries about her husband slip off my radar, and that wasn't like me. I had her back, always. But I had to know if Philip was seeing Tate before I acted. If he was cheating, he wouldn't be too hard to catch. Smug, entitled Philip would leave a trail. As soon as this ugly business between Rue and me was settled, I would devote myself to finding out. When he told Char he was golfing, I could call the course and ask for him to see if he at least was where he said he was. I could keep up with Tate on social media, see if her absences matched his boys' weekends. The answer to my unstated question was even more clear. Davis preferred the past in the past, so I would leave it there. Even though my lies were a living thing, they were not about him or us, not really. I was not actively betraying him. So that was that. Of course, he might not see it that way. His old hurts from Laura, they ran deep. I wouldn't risk it. Silence was my best, my only choice. Yet I couldn't simply hand the money to Rue. Not if I could help it. I'd done good with the first half of Nana's trust. I had put a little justice, that word that Rue had tried to use against me, back into the world. I needed to do good with the second half as well. It would be wrong to use it to save my own ass, to let Rue bask in unearned luxury. That meant I had to find a third way out. Rue had begun this as a game. She'd told me not to play, but I already was. I had to. More than that, I had to win. It was an easy thing to say, I have to beat her at her own game. But I had never played before. I didn't even know all the rules, and she was a pro. It was as crazy as my challenging LeBron James to a driveway round of horse, and yet I couldn't see another choice. Also, I was pretty fucking good at it. My past and my quiet, watchful nature combined to make me a natural. I'd seen through Rue, after all. She'd gambled, claiming to be Lolly Shipley without all the facts. God, if it had worked, I'd have given her anything. It was emotionally smart. But it had tipped her hand. Coming at me unprepared like that, plus the dingy house, I'd understood gut deep that she was under some external pressure. Money or time, she was short on one or both. I'd used that understanding to buy myself this night to decide. How much more rope would she give me if I pushed her? Quite a bit, I thought. She only had the one great big red button. She wouldn't push it. Not as long as she believed she'd get my money in the end. The moment she understood that I was never going to pay, I had no doubt she'd wreck me. But in this gap, I had some room to work. I was up half the night, staring into the darkness, thinking while Davis slept deep and easy. I could hear Oliver through the baby monitor, sighing and shifting every now and again, but mostly sleeping sweetly, innocent. I needed a plan that did not involve the police or an appeal to Rue's better nature. The first option ensured that all my secrets would come out, and as for the second, a better nature, Rue didn't seem to have one. At some point, I shifted from waking to dreaming, falling into a fantasy world where Rue had simply disappeared. Mysteriously. Never to be seen again. I understood that this was on me. If she disappeared, it would be because I made it so. I jerked awake, startled and sweating. Beside me, Davis stirred briefly. I froze, waiting for sleep to reclaim him, my body stiff, my eyes staring wide into the darkness. Disappearing Rue was a road I would not let myself go down, not even in dreams. I had once, long ago, taken a human life. I understood the kind of gap that created in the world. It was greater than the sum of its parts. I wouldn't purposefully create another absence, no matter what, I told myself. I didn't have the stomach for it. Rue was awful, and she deserved to be in prison. But she also had a child who clearly loved her, needed her. Perhaps that was the key, her human connections. For the first time, I caught a glimpse of a narrow path, a crevice I could maybe squeeze through between paying her and the truth. Every person has a soft spot. Hers was Luca. Each time I brought him up, I felt a stillness in her. Motherhood was too powerful for even Rue to be immune to it. Oliver had caused a shift in me, waking me to depths of love I'd never suspected lived inside me. I'd loved Maddie and Davis before he came, but his arrival had deepened those loves. He'd been so small and sleepy, so fully in my care. His vulnerability in the face of the cold world made me understand how vulnerable Davis and Maddie were too, and how very mine. Mother love must be alive inside Rue, or her kid wouldn't be so nice. As much as I hated Rue, I couldn't deny that Luca came across as a kid who'd been loved from birth on up. Not that she deserved some kind of medal for it. Every mammal protected its own babies, including rats and weasels. It was hardwired into the biology. Even my own mother, cold as she was, had once upon a time hired me a lawyer. What if I could dig up some equal and opposing dirt on Rue? Something truly ugly that could buy her silence sure as money could. I was willing to bet that Rue had dirty laundry, plenty, and every mother had a secret grown-up life apart from her kid. If I owned that, could I own her the same way she owned me? We could stare each other down, crouched over our big red buttons. Mutually assured destruction. I felt a sparking of real hope. She was better at this than I was, more experienced. But I didn't have to win after all. I only had to play down to a draw, get enough to make her walk away. I needed two things, a secret and to know who she was hiding it from. I didn't know how to get the first thing, not yet, but I did have a line on the second, if I was willing. They were here on business, Rue had said. She'd warned Luca not to get embedded. That meant that somewhere, Luca had real friends, a father. Rue herself had claimed a husband more than once. I needed to find their home base. No sense threatening her with exposure if I had no one to expose her to. She could take Luca and vanish, then destroy my life from afar. At least I knew where to start looking. In 1991, she'd lived in my neighborhood. She'd seen the wreck, or at least seen me stagger out on the driver's side. That meant she'd lived in one of the few houses that faced the woods at the T-intersection where Rainway Street met the woods and the old dirt road. I had to go back there. It was the last patch of earth I ever wanted to revisit, but I had to see which houses had windows that overlooked the site of the wreck. The lots were large, so it couldn't be more than 3 or 4. I'd find out who owned those houses back in 1991. I was pretty sure the county would keep records on that down at the courthouse. If not, there were other ways. People remembered things like that, so I would ask. I would find Rue's family. It wasn't much, but it was something. An idea, a direction I could walk in. It was better than feeling helpless, and I thought I could get some sleep, even though right now my plan truly amounted to just 3 words. Blackmail her back. 8. I got to Rue's house half an hour before her deadline, feeling as if my stomach had been filled with bees. I was here to promise her the money and buy myself some room to maneuver. This morning, in the scant time between Maddie and Davis leaving and my meeting Char for our power walk, I'd called Boyce Skelton and instructed him to convert my investments into cash, just in case. I was going to play, but I could lose. I needed to be liquid with all my options open. Boyce had started in with all the same arguments he'd given me when I'd asked him to liquidate the first half, but I'd cut him off. I wasn't interested in taking life advice from Boyce Skelton. He hadn't exactly put me in this situation, but he hadn't helped. He'd sloppily given a criminal access to a computer containing my files, and the files of God knew how many other clients. He had paid, though, a little. On a hunch, I asked him what kind of car he was driving these days. He fell silent, then mumbled something about its having been stolen. I pressed, asking what kind of car it had been. He had described Rue's red convertible. Stolen my ass. Boyce was married. I was willing to bet that Rue, with her penchant for recording, had gotten more out of her time with Boyce than a peek at his files. I could hardly stand to talk to him long enough to get the wheels in motion. If I ended this with any of Nana's money left, I was damn well moving it to another firm. While we talked, I put Rue's name in Google to see what the internet might know. There were a few people on social media sites with that name, but none of them were her. Only one was American, and she looked about 13. It was disappointing, but I supposed blackmailers were the least likely professionals to join LinkedIn. The door opened even as I was reaching for the bell. Had she been watching for me from behind the ugly blanket over the big picture window, as anxious as I was? I hoped so, even though I could not imagine Rue antsy. She seemed cool as a cat as she stepped outside, pulling the door closed loosely behind her. She wore another set of black Lycra gym clothes that showed every line of her honed body. My own clothes gave her pause, though. "Is that a pool cover-up?" she asked, looking me up and down. "It's a jacket," I said. It was cousin to a jacket, anyway, a lightweight, baggy thing that came down to mid-thigh. I peeled it off so she could see that underneath I had put on her game's required uniform, yoga pants, sheer and fitted, with a half tank that I wore as a jog bra and she'd wear as a shirt. I didn't want her hands all over me again. She twirled her finger in the air, and I spun slowly, feeling like her funhouse mirror image, shorter, squatter, thicker in the hips. "Good. Good job. Now pass me that abomination," she said, holding her hand out for the jacket. "Can we go in?" I asked. I didn't like standing in the scant shade of her azaleas in what, truthfully, was underwear. Char was 2 doors down, and what would she think If she came outside and saw me playing strip and spin on the porch with this woman she so disliked. Hand it over, Rue insisted. So I did. She began feeling along the lining and then checking the pockets. I waited, fidgeting, looking all around for passing neighbors. Rue ignored me, pulling my phone out and making sure it was powered down. Now can we go in? I asked again, glancing around, my arms crossed over my bra top. Rue handed my things back. You don't want Kanga to see us together, is that it? Well, yes, that too. I downplayed it, shrugging my way into my jacket and repocketing my dead phone. You went out of your way to make her feel jealous at book club, so... Her voice shifted into a sing-song chant. Amy and Rue, sitting in a tree, cheating on Char, and Philip makes three. My eyes narrowed. Philip makes three what? Cheaters? Had she connected Philip and Tate? I'd promised myself that I would find out if Philip was embroiled in a full-blown affair. And here was Rue, a professional at digging up secrets. She might already know, definitively. That was a topic worth exploring. But she was still talking, saying, She's very small town, your little friend. They're like that. Territorial. As if she and I were one thing, and Charlotte was another. Luca's in the den right now. We could slip off behind her back to a cheap motel, by which I mean a coffee shop. I ignored that. Does Luca not know what you do for a living, I mean? I kept my voice as casual as I could. She paused, her eyes sizing me up before she spoke. Amy, did you come to play? I saw it then. She had been antsy, waiting for me. She still was, and I thrilled to it, though I worked hard to keep it off my face. She honestly didn't know which way I was going to swing. I decided not to answer directly. This isn't a game, Rue. This is my life. She steepled her fingers, and her smile went wolfish. Everything is a game. Asking if you can use my job against me is a play. You think you can threaten to tell Luca, make me back down. I could feel a blush heating my cheeks, but I kept my chin up, met her eyes. Maybe I'm trying to see if you have any shame. That made her tilt her head, her eyes gone sharp and bright, like a bird catching a glimpse of something shiny. I really don't. And I shouldn't, she said. She stepped in just a little closer, but she wasn't trying to intimidate me, and it wasn't sexual. It was almost confiding, and I had the sense that whatever she said next, it would be true. People do awful things, Amy. They have to pay for them. They want to pay, even. It's the only thing that will give them any peace. I make them pay me specifically, but it gets the job done. I'm practically a fucking priest. Why wouldn't Luca know? I'm not ashamed. She gave me that quirky, one-sided smile. He has no idea that you're a client, though. I would think, since he's frenzies with that stepchild of yours, you'd prefer that. I felt my lips tighten. Of course I would. I didn't want Luca to think of me as anything but Maddie's nice monster. I found myself peering at Char's porch through the azaleas again. I couldn't help it. Rue sighed and relented. Let's go to the back patio. The privacy fence will live up to its name. I followed her inside. Once again, my eyes took a moment to adjust. It was a summery Florida fall day, but the gray blanket and low ceilings made this room instantly gloomy. The windows on the other side were bare of blinds or curtains, but between the screened-in porch, the trees, and the tall privacy fence, they didn't let in much natural light. Luca was on the sofa wearing what looked like pajama pants, with a t-shirt and a pair of bulky headphones. His long, dark hair was still sleep-snarled. He was hunched forward toward the coffee table, tapping frantically at the keys of a shiny black laptop. On the screen, a little soldier ran across a weird landscape, shooting monstrous bug things. A typical teenager. His mother had stepped onto the porch for 3 minutes, and already he'd abandoned math or history for pixel murder. He looked up when we came back in, and his soldier got fragged. "Crap," he said. I thought because he was busted gaming during school hours, but then he grinned and added, "You got me killed." "My bad," Rue said. Luca pushed the headset down around his neck, looking eagerly back and forth between us. "Hey, Ms. Wei, so is it worked out?" I blinked, confused. Rue stepped in smoothly. "There's not a beginner scuba class scheduled until next month," Rue said. And that was true. She must have checked the website. His face fell, but she wasn't done. "Amy's going to teach you herself, one-on-one, no waiting." "Really?" Lucas said, which was exactly what I was thinking. Was she serious? It was so presumptuous, as if my time and expertise were in a bundle with my Nana's money, and it all belonged to her. But Luca was looking at me, hopeful as a Labrador. I couldn't help but like Luca, especially when his cool reserve broke and he acted like the kid he was. "When do we start?" I smiled, plastic. "We're talking about it." "We're going to go sit on the patio," Rue said, giving his hair a fond tug as she passed. "So you can get back to your schoolwork," I said, fixing him with universal mom eye. I couldn't help it. He laughed and pulled the headset on again, restarting his game. Rue said, "He will, don't worry." She paused then and said, as if it had only just occurred to her, "Where's your baby?" "Lisa Fenton's watching him," I said. I hadn't asked Char. I felt bad enough about the headache. But Oliver made me soft, and I also didn't want him getting baby whispered again. Not to mention the field trip I had planned as soon as Rue and I were done. I was going back to Waverly Place, my old house, that intersection. I couldn't take Oliver to that neighborhood, that road. It was too soaked in bad history. "I'll grab us some water," Rue said. She went past the stairs into the kitchen, leaving me alone with Luca. He was deep into his game. I stayed where I was, searching the room with my eyes, trying to figure out what was Rue and what was rented. I could pick out bits of her, her tastes so expensive that anything hers practically glowed in this room. A spectacular raw silk dressing gown draped over the sofa. The computer Luca was using. It was big for a laptop, gleaming new, with a red dragon logo on the back of it. Did Rue use it as well as Luca? If I had 10 minutes alone with it. "Come on," Rue said, startling me. I hadn't heard her bare feet padding in. She held up 2 curvy glass bottles of sparkling water with a French name. Nothing I'd ever heard of. Nothing I could pronounce. She was treating this meet as if it were a social call. I didn't want to sip a refreshing beverage, cozied up with Rue to discuss how she could best rob me like we were besties organizing a bake sale. I took the water anyway, made myself smile. Only moments ago, she'd spoken to me about being like a priest. I'd had the sense that for the first time, I was face to face with Rue. Not some character she was playing to keep me off balance. The real thing. I wanted to see more of her. Needed to, if I was going to beat her. I followed her out onto the small screened porch. Rue sat down on the love seat. It was part of a cheap set of outdoor furniture, made of plastic formed to mimic wood grain, topped by mildewed cushions in a faded tropical print. I stayed standing, my unopened water in my hand. She said, "This is the last real conversation we'll have, until it's time for you to transfer the money." You're still worried I'm going to try to record you? It occurred to me that she could be recording, and I should have thought of that already. Trying to think like her, like a criminal, was new. I needed to learn faster. I couldn't stay the fox in this hunt. Let her have all the dogs and guns and horses. I gave her a tight smile. And what if I am? There could be a car full of FBI men a mile away with a directional mic pointed right at you. She dismissed that with a wave. Please, no way Fed stepped in on this small-time BS that fast. It would be the local yokels. I know what they use here, and you're not wearing it. Not in those pants. I think you came to seal our deal, and I'm glad. It's the best choice, for you as well as me. For me, I asked, and a little outrage leaked into my voice. I couldn't help it. She nodded, serious, and this was her again. Rue, not playing, talking to me as if I were an equal. I've seen your financial records, Amy. You blew half your wad setting up a foundation to pay off that poor schmo who went to prison for you. But it didn't fix you, did it? She looked me right in the eye, speaking with conviction. People think they can buy absolution at their leisure or on someone else's dime. It doesn't work like that. You have to pay the universe. My eyes narrowed. You aren't the universe. I'm what the universe sent, she said, almost offhand, but I had the feeling it was the most honest thing she'd ever said to me. She twisted the cap off her water. Was this how she justified herself? But she had no idea how I'd felt or what I'd done trying to pay for my mistakes. This was crap, and I told her so. I paid off Tig's mortgage because I owed him. I don't owe you. No, you gave him exactly what you felt comfortable giving, anonymously, in the way that suited you best, she said. And there was an edge of sorrow to it. It was as if she felt bad for me, but it didn't change what she had to do. She took a sip of water and then set the bottle down. You enjoyed paying off his mortgage. It made you feel good. But this hurts. This feels unfair and random. That's the kind of paying the universe demands. I had to ask, and what's the universe going to do to you? She chuckled, and her walls came up. Let's stay on topic. I'm not that obedient, I said. It felt good to dig at her, trying to keep her real face in the room. Seriously, I want to know. What do you think the universe will do to you for all the bad you're doing to me right now? She stopped smiling then, taking it seriously. Her eyes on me were very cool. I've prepaid, bitch, she said. And then she brushed her hands together, briskly, done with honesty and metaphysics both. I could tell she believed it, though, that she had prepaid. Good. It hinted at a darkness in her own past. That darkness, her own worst thing, was what I had to find. Sit. Let's get down to it. A puff of mildewed air escaped as I took the sagging chair catty-corner to her. I set my unopened water down on the low table so I could cross my arms. I needed to curl my body into a smaller shape, feel my own warmth. How do I know you won't come back? What's to stop you from bleeding me forever? Rue scoffed, and now she was insouciant book club Rue again. What would I come back for? Your signature necklaces from Chico's? Your copper-bottom pans? Pay me, and what you'll have left is plain old middle-class equity. That shit won't call me, or attract anyone else like me. Once you pay me, something magic happens. You become a regular lady with no secret money, no secret plans. You'll even have bought the right to keep pretending you have no secrets. Her tone was light, condescending even, like she was explaining to a toddler how to use a spoon. Even so, Her words felt as invasive as her hands had felt last time, when they'd gone rummaging around my body and my baby. She was watching my face closely, and now she gave a sly little smile. "Speaking of secrets, mine aren't on that computer." "What computer?" I said, to cover my blush. "Lucas, you were ogling it inside," Rue said. I hadn't even realized how hard I'd been staring at that computer, and sweet God, she didn't miss a trick. "It's strictly his. We homeschool, I told you. If you don't believe me, stick your head in the door, ask if you can borrow it. You can read his civics paper, maybe do some algebra." "Or play shooters during school time," I said, tilting my chin up, but I could feel heat flood my cheeks. I had to be better at this. I had to get better, fast. But how? Most of my lies, my whole life long, had been lies of omission, keeping silent when I should have spoken. I needed to learn to lie, like Rue did, with my words and my body language, maybe even with my thoughts. Yesterday had gone better, when I'd been running on instinct and adrenaline. Now I was overthinking it. I made myself look her right in the eye, and I said a thing I hoped I didn't mean. "I don't care about the computer. I thought everything through, and I don't see an alternative. I can't go to jail. I can't leave my baby. I'll give you the money." It came out so plain, so resigned, that even I believed me. I wanted to keep Rue focused on her legal threat, as if that were the thing that scared me most. I had to keep her believing she had read me right, and that she truly owned the worst I'd ever done. So I gave her this partial truth, and something in my demeanor must have telegraphed his honesty, because she leaned back, smiling. "When can we do the transfer?" "It's a trust. It'll take a couple of weeks to dissolve it," I said, lying on instinct again. I was surprised she'd asked. It seemed like something she would know. But I needed time, and she'd just handed me an opening to buy some. Her eyes kindled, and she leaned forward, bracing her forearms on her knees. "God damn it, Amy. You're playing." "I'm not," I said, letting my anger cover my dismay. "There's all these stipulations." She was laughing outright now, and I felt my voice fade to nothing. "Jesus, you are all the way in. And you're pretty good. You snapped right to that. But you are not in your league, kid. I know my way around an investment account. There are no restrictions anymore, not since you turned 35. You can get it liquid in 3 days. My face had gone so hot I was likely cherry-colored. She'd laid a trap to see if I was as resigned as I seemed, and I'd gambled right into it, dumb as a fawn. She threw her head back and ran her hands through her hair, shaking it out. "You're gonna make me work for it, aren't you?" "Not a question." "We'll do the transfer Friday." I made myself meet her eyes. "You're off by a little. Liquidating takes 3 full business days. I won't have it until Monday." She leaned forward, agitated, studying my face again. Now her cheeks flushed too, but with temper. "Bullshit," she said. I pulled my phone out of my pocket. "You want to see the email confirmation?" She regarded me with hooded eyes. "Yes, yes I do." We sat in uncomfortable silence while it booted, Rue leaning forward, tension in her body. I navigated to my email. Boyce had sent one exactly as I'd requested. Rue scanned it. It was only a few lines long, Boyce confirming he was liquidating my account and estimating that it should yield just over $240,000 after fees and taxes. Lastly, the email said the funds would be available on Monday by noon. What the email didn't say was that I'd instructed him to hold off starting the process until afternoon today to buy myself the weekend. Rue took it at face value, though. She lost her temper. "You should have fucking done this yesterday." I felt my pulse quicken. I'd gotten something past her. I hit back. You should have told me you were on a deadline. Instantly, she dialed it down. Her body relaxed, softening, but too quickly. I could see it was an act of will. My rental on this place is up on Sunday, she said. That might be true, but it hardly explained her overreaction. Rue had stumbled. Just a little, while I'd been crashing and flailing around like a bull moose. But still, now I knew that she was on a timeline, and I'd learned it by reading her, same as she'd been reading me. All my years of lying by omission, lying so deep that I even believed me, had schooled me in dishonesty. I knew it when I saw it. Perhaps I wasn't as far out of my league as she believed. Gee, sorry, I said, using sarcasm to cover my excitement. Now I knew she had a deadline, some threat she had to counter or avoid. Could I find it? Could I speed it up? I guess you'll have to shell out, buy yourself a few more days in paradise. She shook her head, so very casual, almost perfect, but I could see a hint of effort at the edges on her smile. Oh, don't worry about it. I'm not the kind of woman who pays her own rent. That was interesting as well. Did she have a lover or a friend or an accomplice who paid for the house? Maybe the mysterious absent husband. He or she could be a soft place in her armor, just like Luca. Or it could be another of her clients, someone caught in her net like me, a possible ally against her. She stood up, paced away a few steps, staring through the screen out at the yard. It was unkempt, a balding patch of grass with a lot of hard, dark earth showing. No flower beds, just more overgrown azaleas near the windows and a stand of tall, loblolly pines near the far end. When she finally turned back, her anger had been packed away. But it was still there, inside her. I could see it in the lines of her, even as she made her voice sound casual and calm. Monday, then. On the bright side, you can take Luca for his open water dives over the weekend. I thought you'd only have time for the coursework and the pool dives. I crossed my arms even tighter. So you want a quarter mil and free scuba lessons for your kid? It seemed so petty, as if she were robbing me and then putting out a tip jar. Would you like anything else of mine? A stick of gum? A kidney? That made her laugh. I wish I didn't like you, she said. To be honest, Amy, I just want you busy. You get ideas, idle hands and all that. Getting Luca certified will eat your time. Plus, he really wants to do it. We can do the classroom work. I have the DVD and I can get him a book and administer the tests. I was negotiating. If we did the full course, I wouldn't just be busy. I'd be watched. I can't do his contained water dives. The pool schedule at the shop fills up weeks in advance. This was true, but it didn't faze her. Borrow Tate's pool. That made me almost laugh. Have you met Tate? She's not going to do me any favors. I'll ask. She likes me, Rue said, smiling blandly. That was patently untrue. Tate was a natural queen bee. She didn't like beautiful women. I bit my lip. Unless Rue had dirt on Tate. Was my possible ally Tate Benasco, of all people? If so, then my gut was right. Tate was having an actual affair with Philip. Because what else could Rue's leverage be? I didn't want to get distracted, but I had promised myself I would find out for Char's sake. What do you have on Tate? I asked. The question caught her off guard. I saw surprise flash across her face. I didn't think she'd expected me to be so blatant. Tate doesn't owe me anything, Rue said, but that was not an answer. Neither do I. I owe the universe, isn't that what you said? Why is Tate going to loan the universe her pool? Touché, Rue said, almost admiringly, and that weird head tilt was back, bird-like or maybe reptilian. She smiled, and it was genuine. She actually did like me, I thought, in her odd, carnivorous way. If we'd met in California, I would have liked her back. Now she leaned in, confiding. I'll say this. It's not karma with Tate. It's just psychology. Tate thinks she has a nicer house than me, what with a pool and that brand new IKEA dining set. Her voice dripped disdain, but it was wholly aimed at Tate, and possibly most of the other women in our neighborhood. I had the sense that I was outside it. She was speaking to me almost as a peer. She's competitive, especially with other women, so she'll like it that I have to ask for a favor. I'll make it sound as if I'm coming too. She wants me to see her house, her things, and compare them with this shit here. She wants a win with me, and so far, she's zero for try hard. That sounded like the Tate I knew. It didn't let Philip off the hook, though. Rue might be covering for Tate exactly because Tate was a client, which left me still on the fence about what, if anything, I should say to Charlotte. It also sounded as if Rue would not come with Luca for lessons. I didn't ask, though. It might be bait, like when she'd asked me how long it would take to liquidate the money. I wasn't going to snap fast at any opening she dangled. I was learning. Fine, I said, flip as I could. Maybe I could make it work for me. Get Luca talking about his mother. He might let something useful slip. He can start the bookwork today. Can you line up Tate's pool for tomorrow and Friday? Then Saturday and Sunday we'll drive over to the jetties for his open water dives. Maddie was going to be ecstatic about scuba all weekend with Luca, so that was a teeny upside. Rue was shaking her head, though. No jetties. Book us on a boat. You have some prime wrecks around here. I love a wreck dive. She grinned at the face I made. Not what I wanted. To spend the last of my precious days out on the ocean with her. But I had no better option at this moment. Fine, I said again. After this, when our paths cross, we won't discuss our arrangement. Even when we're alone. We'll chat about casserole recipes that use those yummy cans of soup. Or whatever passes for banter around here. Then Monday, meet me here at noon. You'll transfer the funds to an account I give you, and I'll be gone. Really gone. Won't that be nice? Rue asked, stretching, lithe and pleased in her body at the thought of all my money. She straightened, leaned in again, and captured my gaze. Or you screw with me, and I blow your life and this town? Easy as I blew your lawyer. Fine, I said. It was starting to feel like the only word I knew. I'll go tell Luca to get ready. You can take him with you. I shook my head. I had plans. I need to go to Divers Down. I have to borrow some equipment, I told her. It was even true. Like most scuba junkies, I had a walk-in closet's worth of backup dive gear, but I needed to pick up full tanks and a new open-water book with blank quizzes. Plus, every wetsuit and BCD I had at home was cut for women. She sized me up, and then she came to a decision. Okay, I'll send him your way in an hour or so. I stood, keeping my shoulders tense, so I didn't telegraph relief. I couldn't let her see how much I wanted this stolen hour. She was taking me seriously now. Twice today she'd even come close to confiding in me. She'd dropped her provocateur's mask, as if I were her peer. I threw a final glance over my shoulder, trying to look nervous and resigned. I needed her to underestimate me. I hoped she was. If she was estimating me exactly right, then I was screwed. I went home, got my Subaru, and headed out of the neighborhood. If I was really going to do this thing she called playing, and I called fighting for my life, I had to go to Waverly Place. I pointed my car north, away from Divers Down, away from the ocean, driving myself directly toward my own long-buried past. 9. Time felt audible, tangible, counted in the pound and pulse of my own heart. 5 days to learn how to play Rue's game. 5 days to find a way to win. It felt surreal to see this neighborhood again. I'd been back in town for close to 7 years now without once going near it. It was a carefully curated blank spot on the map, present but unexamined. Only 20 minutes from my current neighborhood, yet I felt I was driving toward some dark and distant made-up place, dystopian and bleak. The sign was the same, scrolling metal words hung on a wrought iron gate, purely decorative, permanently open. When I was a teenager, Waverly Place was the it neighborhood, but it had aged. The houses were large and probably still overpriced, but the wealthiest people in town now were building on prime lots overlooking the bluffs. I crossed into the neighborhood itself, and though years had passed, it all felt so familiar. I recognized houses where other Brighton kids had lived or I had babysat, and the carpool pickup spot on Maple Drive. Maple intersected with my own old street, Clearwater. I kept my gaze deliberately forward as I crossed over. My parents' former house was on this block, and 2 blocks farther on would be the Shipley home. I had no desire to see what trees were still standing or if the paint colors had changed. I didn't want to be here at all. I drove directly back to Rainway Street, though I almost went right past it. I was looking for the back of the neighborhood, but the woods were gone. Rainway had houses on both sides now. The newer ones were smaller and more homogeneous, brick-fronted with an array of coordinating pastel colors on the hardy plank sides. I turned onto Rainway, and there was my old classmate Shelley Gast's house that put me 2 blocks down from where the dirt road had once run. I could feel myself getting close. It was like driving into a vortex, being pulled toward a dark center. The air became sharper, more electrical, as if the place itself had sentience and judgment. All the little blonde hairs on my forearms rose, and my hands prickled on the wheel as if they'd gone to sleep. I stopped exactly on the spot, in front of what had been Mr. Pratt's house, a white colonial perched up high on a hill. When Tig and I came roaring out of the woods in the Ambassador, Mrs. Shipley's little car had skidded all the way across the street and partway up the slope, tearing gashes in Mr. Pratt's manicured grass. The crash had awakened both the Pratts. Mr. Pratt was the one who'd called the police. I got out of my Subaru, my legs shaking so hard I wasn't sure they'd hold me. I realized I was hungry. So hungry. I hadn't eaten yet today, and I had mostly pushed last night's dinner around my plate. Once I noticed the feeling, it became huge, almost omnipresent. To be this savagely hungry felt almost righteous, a dark sensation close to pleasure. It made me remember I deserved to be this empty. I closed my eyes, made myself breathe slowly. I was not that girl, and I was here on business. I looked around. On the old side of Rainway, the lots were much larger. To the right of the Pratt house, the hills subsided. I could see the windows of just 3 more houses, which meant only these 4 had a clear view of this spot. The Pratts had already been quite elderly at the time. Even their grandkids had been grown then, so Rue was not a Pratt. The house next door to them had been for sale, I remembered, empty. Could Rue have been a squatter? Not a child of privilege at all, but a runaway, 10 or 12 years old, camped out in the empty house. It didn't ring true. It wasn't that kind of neighborhood. Waverly Place houses had alarm systems, plus a private security company drove around checking for interlopers. The next house was Jesse Cannon's old place. He had been a Brighton kid, the youngest of three boys, no sisters. That left one house, sand-colored brick with a roofline that rose into three peaks. I had no idea who had lived there back in 1991. I stared at the windows, and they stared back like empty eyes. It was the last house on the block. After it, Rainway curved. I walked close enough to read the numbers on the stone mailbox, 226. I'd have to call my local lawyer, the one who'd long ago worked with Boyce to set up the bogus foundation that had paid off Tig Sims. He could dig through the records at the courthouse and find out who'd owned the place in 1991. I had to get to Divers Down and then pick up my baby. I didn't want to keep Luca waiting so long that it became suspicious. Still, I lingered by the mailbox. Why not simply ask? My stomach growled audibly inside me like an animal. There was no harm in asking. I climbed the steps to the porch and rang the bell. It pealed out Westminster Quarters, fronting like Big Ben. My mother had installed a bell like that, grand and clear, in the Boston house. A woman came to the door. She was older than I was, tricked out in the kind of all-white resort gear that costs more than a night at a really good resort. She was as expensive-looking as her clothes, ash-blonde highlights concealing any hint of gray, her face lightly and expertly made up. Like Rue, she'd had some work done, but she was older and hers was showing. The plump skin of her cheeks and forehead didn't match her neck. "Yes," she said, eyebrows arched, pre-impatient, as if I were holding out a booklet about hell or vacuum cleaners. Waverly wasn't the kind of neighborhood that tolerated door-to-door anything. "Sorry to bother you, and when I'm such a mess," I said. I touched my hair apologetically. "I just came from yoga, but I was passing by and, well, I grew up here. I was trying to find my house. It's so confusing with all the new builds." "You grew up on this street," she said, with a healthy amount of skepticism. My old Subaru, visible behind me on the road, was surely not helping, and neither was my baggy jacket. It did look like a pool cover-up, damn Rue for being right. "Yes, near Shelley Gast's place. Shelley and I went to Brighton together. If I could find her house, I'm sure I could get to mine. I walked that route a million times when I was a kid." Her face cleared. "Oh, we knew the Gasts. Lovely family. They moved to be closer to the grandkids. You aren't far off. Go that way, maybe 10 houses down." She pointed back the way I'd come. "Thank you," I said. "How long have you lived here? Did you know my parents, the Dennings?" "I don't know that name, no," she said, "but we've only been here 15 years. "Yes, they'd moved away by then," I said, perky. "It's strange, but I don't remember this house at all. Who did you buy it from?" "No one," she said, and chuckled at my blank expression. "We built it. This was an empty lot. No wonder you're confused, between our place and Shantytown across the street." I did my best to give her a sympathetic look. Poor her, beset by climbers who could only afford homes in the high 6 figures. "I can't believe the woods are gone," I said. It was the only sympathetic thing I could say that was true. "Thanks for the directions." I walked back toward my Subaru. This house hadn't even existed, and I'd ruled out the others. So where had Rue been standing? She'd seen the crash. She'd described it on the day she'd come to wring a confession out of me. She'd asked me if I remembered the sounds, the smells. I stopped dead in the middle of the road. Those things were the same in all car crashes. She'd claimed she witnessed the wreck when she was pretending to be Lolly Shipley. She'd never said she saw it from a window. That was my assumption. She'd gone along with it. But what had she known, really, that I had not prompted? She knew my maiden name, knew my history. knew about the accident, that I had money, that I had so much guilt I'd already given tons of it away. She'd sought Boyce out, in fact, because she knew my story. If she wasn't a witness, then how had she known all that? Most especially, how had she known that I was driving? When I asked that question, it got simple. Because the list of people who knew that I'd been behind the wheel was very short. Me, but silence had long been my specialty. My mother, but she had the knowledge buried so deep that she did not admit it even to herself. I knew exactly how that worked. Shit, I said out loud, because there was only one more person. Only one person alive who could have sold me out to Rue. Tig fucking Sims. 10. I drove to Divers Down to pick up wetsuits and air tanks. Then I had to go straight home, and yet every molecule in me yearned west, bending toward Tig Sims. Anxiety came in waves, and at the crest of each, I was sure that Tig was in on it. More than in, the orchestrator. He was Rue's mystery husband, Luca's father, and the whole plan had been his from the start. But if this was true, then he had to know that I'd paid off his mortgage. Why send Rue? He could have come to me himself, said, "Do you really think that was all that 3 years of my life were worth? Write another check." Maybe because this hurt more. If hurting me mattered, then they'd done a gonzo job. This hurt like hell. But when I put his 3 incarcerated years in terms of Oliver, in terms of losing that time myself, I deserved it. Then the wave would pass, and hope would swell behind it. I would be suddenly equally sure that Rue was using him. Tig was her unwitting pawn. He would know things about her, her maiden name, her home base, more of her clients, that could help me, assuming he had any desire to help me. But why would he? I would ask, and anxiety would rise again. It was an unceasing, churning cycle, but I couldn't go to Tig and end it. I had to retrieve Oliver, meet Luca, keep Rue happy and complacent. She'd been smart to book my time up, keep me watched and busy. As I pulled into my driveway, I saw Luca already sitting on my front porch steps like an orphan, staring deep into the mysteries of his cell phone, wearing his expensive wireless headphones. I made myself smile and called to him, "Hey, Luca," in a normal voice. To him, I was only Maddie's nice monster doing him a favor, not one of his mother's clients, paying the universe for all the bad I'd put into the world. He must have heard me over his music, because he looked up and turned the beam of his white smile on me. It was so spectacular that my breath caught. When I was 15, what would I have done to get a boy this beautiful to make that smile for me? Anything, that was the answer, and my heart quailed for Maddie. Luca hurried toward me with unabashed excitement, pushing the headphones down around his neck. "Hey, Ms. Way, this is so cool, thank you," he said, sounding genuinely grateful. I planted him on my keeping room sofa with some OJ and the open water textbook. He got to it, studying, and the right way, too. Each chapter had learning objectives in the form of questions at the front, and he was underlining the answers as he came to them. He didn't even put headphones on, giving the book his whole attention. I kept catching myself staring at the kid, seeking Tig in the straight lines of his nose, his wide, full mouth, his chiseled jawline. I couldn't see it. Which meant exactly nothing. Genes were funny things. And anyway, Tig could be Rue's husband whether Luca was his child or not. He could just as easily be her business partner, or her patsy. Watching Luca, I wished I had a textbook too, The DIYer's Guide to Blackmailers. Machiavelli for Dummies. Something that would help me figure out Tig's motives. The only way to know for sure was to go to him, ask him myself. The hours ate themselves. Rue did not check up on me, perhaps too busy with some wretched business of her own. Luca read the first two sections and passed the quizzes before Maddie got home. The two of them went bounding downstairs to hang, whatever that meant. Hopefully nothing horizontal. I made sure that the basement door was open, and after half an hour, I toted down Cokes and some disingenuous sliced apples. I was reassured to find them sitting innocently side by side at the computer, watching something goofy on YouTube. Luca was wholly absorbed by the screen, but Maddie was watching him watching. My girl was headed for a heartbreak, but hopefully a small one. So far, it looked like an unrequited crush, and its object would be gone too fast to leave a large mark, I hoped. Meanwhile, its object had me stuck inside my house. I had to steal some time tomorrow. Rue hadn't left me much room, but I thought I might find some at the starting edge of day. While the kids were downstairs, I practiced lying in the master bathroom mirror. To beat Rue, I had to do more than lie with silence. More even than lying with my mouth. I needed whole-body dishonesty, deception folded into my smiles, and the way I manually kept my shoulders loose and my hands still. Over dinner, I tried the lines I'd practiced, telling Davis and Maddie that I'd been asked to sub in on an early morning dive class for a sick coworker. Not a boat trip, I told them, just a walk-in at the beach reef. I'd be home by 9, plenty of time for Davis to make his 9:30 class and to meet Char for our walk. I even ate like a liar, as if I enjoyed the way my good meatloaf clumped, thick as clay, in my dry mouth. They believed me. So easily it scared me. I was good at this. Too good. At bedtime, Davis had no questions about what was bothering me or the dive I'd purely invented. I lay awake for a long time after he fell asleep. I felt sick with guilt, and I was glad of it. Rue, in my position, would sleep as sweetly as Oliver. She was making me a better liar, but she couldn't make me like it. By 4, I was up, layering a light cotton dress over a flowery tankini, dressed as if I really were heading to a dive. Even my clothes were lies. And worse, I was sneaking out to meet Tig Sims. Again. The last time I'd done this, it had ended so, so poorly. That thought nearly shut me down. Before the sun rose, I was close enough to Mobile Bay to smell the salt. I wished I could keep driving, straight in and under. Down to where it was quiet and blue and no one knew my name. 7 years ago, I'd started down this highway so many times. At first, I couldn't even make it out of Florida. As the weeks passed, I'd pushed closer, but I'd never once gotten past the Baldwin Beach exit. There had been a quarter century's worth of shame blocking my way. This time, I gunned it, racing toward Restoration Garage with my foot heavy on the gas. Though I had no idea what I would find. I couldn't let the complicated swamp of feelings that were choking me slow me down. Restoration was on a quiet county road, a long, low building covered in green corrugated metal siding. There was a chain-link fence running all the way around it, with a roll of barbed wire at the top. It had a gate with a keypad, but I didn't know the code, and it was dark inside. Tig's house was on the property, too. I remembered that from when I'd paid off his mortgage. It was a small, red-brick ranch outside the fence. I followed a fork in the gravel drive down to it. An old Mustang was parked in front, a low-slung beast of a car, deep blue and gleaming. I parked behind it. The house had no porch and no awning, just a concrete pad, and no lights were on. I crossed the lawn, wet with morning dew, and though the air was warm and humid,